السلام عليكم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. All praises are Allah's Lord of the worlds. And may His peace and blessings be upon our Master, the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and His pure Immaculate Ahlul Bayt. Ibn Arabi, a very famous Muslim Sufi, in one of his works, he very delicately dissects La ilaha illallah in a very particular manner. In a manner that when La ilaha illallah becomes translated into English, the meaning gets lost because of translation. And I just want to share with you some of his thoughts. La ilaha illallah, when you want to literally translate it, is no deity but Allah. And then with the Arabs, in Arabic, they don't have a is. They don't explicitly bring the word is, usually. The is usually, it's hidden in the sentence. And here, La ilaha illallah, if one wants to open it up, would be La ilaha mawjudun illallah. And in translation wise, it would be there is no deity but Allah. And that is a translation we're familiar with. And Ibn Arabi first starts with this form of La ilaha illallah, but then he brings another, more deeper meaning to La ilaha illallah. Okay, so in this first analysis, there is no deity, La ilaha illallah, but Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This La, that this holy formula starts with, is a negating particle. So it has to be negating something. It has to be negating something. What is it negating? Ibn Arabi says there are two things that it can negate. And he says it has to be one of these two, not the other. He says this attributing of deity that the mushrikeen did in relation to the external idols, those physical idols, this attributing deity to these physical idols, this can be conceived in two ways, this attributing of deity. Irrespective of whether either of these two ways are on a par with reality or not. Now, what are those two ways? And with each one, is it on a par with reality? Is it real, something real or not? I'm going slowly on purpose so that everyone follows. Because the message is important at the end. Yes. All this La ilaha illallah we say, there may be some hidden meanings behind it that we've taken for granted. So it can be conceived of two ways. Either the mushrikeen the attribute deity and say that this physical idol is God with a small g, is a deity. They say this physical idol is God. They're saying that which is in the physical realm of existence, this idol, that is God. Or in their minds, they're attributing deity to the physical idol. These two are different. In the first, they see that which is outside, in the outside world, is God. In the other, though, in the realm of their minds, they're attributing deity to God. The difference between these two is that the first is not on a par with reality. The second is on a par with reality, because that which is in their minds is real. That which is in their minds is reality. It's happening in their minds. Whereas in the first instance, the first scenario, when they say that physical idol is God, that isn't on a par with reality. But when it comes to the realm of their minds, it's happening. It's something which is really happening in their minds. So the first is not on a par with reality. There's an absence of reality. The second is on a par with reality. There's a presence of reality. Which one are you negating when you say La ilaha? If you're negating the first one, you're saying there's no absence. There's no absence of reality. Meaning there is reality, meaning the physical idol is God. Whereas with the second, what you're negating, which is in the mind of the mushrikeen, you're saying there's no presence of reality. There's no that idol that you have in your mind, which is something real, on a par with reality, we negate it. And it's the second that we mean when we say La ilaha illallah. So the formula states this attributing in your head, this attributing deity in your head, we remove it. La ilaha. None of it is real. Illallah. So here now, illallah, but Allah, either you can take Allah as being one of those deities in their head that they were conceiving of. And in that circumstance, we negate all of them. Let's say there are 101, one of them being Allah, because they did believe in Allah, but only in the capacity of a creator. The source of perfection, the attribute of perfection they gave to Allah was in creatorship, but they gave other idols attributes of perfection too. So either, let's say the 101 that they had, one was Allah, we negate them all, those in your head, except Allah. Or we can say Allah is in none of those. All the idols you have in your mind that you attribute deity to, we negate all of them, except Allah. Either way is possible. It's like, one has, let's say, 11 coins. You say none of them is gold, but this one of the 11, Or you say, that's one way, or none of them are gold except this 11th one, which wasn't part of the 10, let's say. Okay. La ilaha illallah. This was the first analysis, where mawjudan occurs after la ilaha, but it's not explicitly written. So the translation becomes, there is no deity but Allah. And that's the translation we are familiar with. But the problem is this, that in Arabic, this mawjudun can be situated in a variety of places in the holy formula, la ilaha illallah. With the first analysis, mawjudun was situated after la ilaha. So it would be la ilaha mawjudun illallah. And that would mean there's no deity. Mawjudun translated as there is. So la ilaha mawjudun illallah. There's no deity but Allah. But what if mawjudun is situated after illallah? Here the meaning changes now. It becomes, Ibn Arabi says, la ilaha illallah mawjudun. And the meaning now is different and much deeper than la ilaha mawjudun illallah. Because here the meaning of illallah becomes adjectival. It's an adjective. Adjective, it's a phrase which is an adjective, an adjectival phrase of ilaha. So that which we're negating now is deity, any deity which is other than Allah, which is other than Allah being the adjective of any deity. There is none. You see, there is no deity which has this adjective of being other than Allah. And that's a very deep meaning. Or to rephrase, this deity that you call an attribute, an attribute of perfection, this deity that you predicate an attribute of perfection, because they only attributed perfection of creatorship to Allah, to the other idols, they predicated other attributes of perfection. They were mushrik in the open sense. They ascribed partnership of perfection to Allah. With this second analysis, they're saying there's no deity with this adjective, with this description, that it's other than Allah. No, there's none. Meaning that all these attributes of perfection that you're attributing to these idols, it's not other than Allah. It's all Allah. You're falsely attributing it to other than Allah. Otherwise, deity, which is other than Allah, doesn't exist. It's only Him. And here the meaning changes. So, a deity which is Allah-less becomes impossible with this second analysis of la ilaha illallah. Now, to support this position, then this verse is given. وَلَا تَدْعُ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَٰهًا آخَرَ. Don't invoke with Allah another deity, another God with a small g. Because according to the second analysis, a deity which is other than Allah, there is none. It's only Allah. Any attribute of perfection is Allah's. A deity which has this adjective, it's illallah, it's other than Allah, no, we're negating it. The verse says, don't invoke with Allah another god, with its small g. Then the verse continues, la ilaha illa hu. There's no deity but him. We discussed that last night. But then the verse ends, or reads, kullu shay'in halikun illa wajha. Everything is destroyed or is nothing, is non-existent, except for Allah's face, meaning Allah's attributes, so Allah's essence. It doesn't matter for now. Everything is halik, is destroyed, doesn't exist, except for Allah's attributes. Now, here, what many scholars do, and most translators of this verse, they say that everything will be destroyed, will be annihilated, except Allah's attributes. Okay? Now, halik, that being destroyed, is an attribute. It's predicated onto everything. When something is predicated onto something, it means that attribute exists in actuality with that everything. So everything is destroyed right now. If scholars want to say it means it will be destroyed, everything, except for Allah's attributes, they need a contextual proof to show that. It's like saying that Ahmad, who's a second year medical student, Ahmad is a doctor. Doctor is the attribute. Does it mean he's a doctor right now? We say no, we mean he will be a doctor. We say, where's your proof? The proof is he's a second year medical student. That's the proof that he's not a doctor. And that's why we can use it allegorically and say, Ahmad is a doctor. We mean it in allegorical terms. He will be a doctor. Where's your proof? He's a second year medical student. Oh, if you have proof, if you have the context, you can use it allegorically. Without a context, you can't use it figuratively. But here there is context, because Ahmad is a second year medical student. If there is no context, you're not allowed to use it figuratively. You have to use it in real terms. Now here, kullu shay'in, everything is destroyed. It's non-existent. The attribute is halik, is destroyed. The scholars, some scholars, the theologians, say it means everything will be destroyed except Allah's attributes. Question, what's your context? Where's your proof that you're using this allegorically? The Quran is saying everything is destroyed except Allah's attributes. And they have none. There is none. And therefore, halik, you can't use allegorically or figuratively. Everything right now is non-existent except Allah's attributes. Everything right now is destroyed, is annihilated, except Allah's attributes, according to the verse, except Allah's face. But the problem is that people are blind. people are heedless to this truth. They're ghafil. And they don't see things as destroyed. Actually, they see things as being, existing, not destroyed, in its own right. Because people are drowned in this realm of multiplicity. They see the ko, kwa, ko, the chair, kwa, chair, the teacher, kwa, teacher, the doctor, kwa, doctor. They see all this, and they see it in and of themselves. Whereas in reality, they have to see the ko, kwa, Allah, the chair, kwa, Allah, the brick, kwa, Allah, the house, kwa, Allah, the doctor, kwa, Allah. If you don't see things, kwa, Allah, and see them, kwa, themselves, any X, kwa, X, and not kwa, Allah, is non-existent. It doesn't exist. It's all in the mind. It's all up here. That PhD, qua PhD, it's in the mind. It doesn't exist. That certificate, qua certificate, not qua Allah. You're imagining it. It doesn't exist. Your wife, your husband, qua wife or husband or children, and so on and so forth. When it's qua them, they don't exist. They have to be seen qua Allah. Because everything is destroyed, is non-existent, is halik, but it's Allah's attributes that are in play. Kulla yawmin hu fi shan. Nothing else. Remember that story that Ayatollah Bahjat I gave? That I was saying that my ustad, he saw this long line of military men, and he was curious where it's leading to. It was leading to Ayatollah Bahjat's mosque. He went to the mosque, and the heads of the army, they were all there. He said, "Can I also enter?" They let him go in. It was very closely monitored. Ayatollah Bahjat was standing about to leave. They said, "Give us one last piece of advice." He said, in Farsi, "Inha hame khiyalat ast." It's all imaginary. These certificates, these badges, these titles, it's all imaginary. It doesn't exist. It's not real. It's all in the head. It's all in the mind. Why? Because they see the certificate, qua certificate. The title, qua title, not qua Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In the Holy Quran, chapter 24, verse 39, وَالَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا, in relation to those who disbelieve. Disbelief has stages to it, there are degrees to disbelief. It doesn't only mean the canonical kafir. أَعْمَالُهُمْ كَسَرَابٍ بِغِيَةٍ. In relation to those who disbelieve, their actions are like a mirage that is on a low land, low plain. Their actions are like a mirage. This is how the Quran is explaining it. Because a mirage doesn't exist, it's in the head. There's no reality to the mirage. كُلُّ شَيْءٍ هَالِكٌ إِلَّا وَجْهَا, the previous verse. It's like a mirage. يَحْسَبُهُ الدَّمَعَانُ مَاءً. the thirsty person deems or supposes that it's water. Hatta idha ja'a, until he reaches it, he comes to the mirage. Lam yajidhu shay'a, he doesn't find anything there. Some translators may say he finds nothing there. That's not precise, because nothingness doesn't exist. The verse doesn't say he finds, like, yajid hu la shay. No. It says lam yajid hu shay'a, because la shay doesn't exist. But he doesn't, when he reaches the mirage, he doesn't find anything. However, wa wajada Allah inda, he finds Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's all Allah. Illa wajha, there he finds Allah. From afar he thought it was water. It was all in the head. On getting there, he found out the truth. وَوَجَدَ اللَّهُ عِنْدَهُ كُلُّ شَيْءٍ هَالِكٌ إِلَّا وَجْهَهُ. Everything is non-existent, is destroyed except Allah's attributes. Right now it's non-existent. Right now it's everything. Because we see the chair core chair, brick core brick, person core person, doctor, everything like that is non-existent. But when you see the doctor core Allah, the brick core Allah, the chair core Allah, PhD core Allah, yes, that's a reality. Otherwise, X core X, it's all in the mind, it's a mirage. And then the verse ends, for wafahu hisaba, then Allah will give his due to in qiyamah. So here, everything that you see in and of itself, it's all in the mind. It's all khiyalat, as Ayatollah Bajjad said. However, we don't know, we don't see the truth of this being khiyalat and being non-existent until we get there in the other realm, yawmin akhir. There we realize the truth, and that's very painful. When we enter the other realm of existence, the hereafter, then we see everything was imaginary. Everything was non-existent. Everything was destroyed. Everything which I granted independence to, it was all khiyalat, imaginary. And one becomes empty, wa wajad Allah, but one sees it was all Allah. There was nothing but Allah's attributes, and I was blind. In the hereafter, they will see the truth, wa wajad Allah. But it's too late, and they'll see all their lives, it was all non-existence. It was all imaginary. And everything is like that. Even Qiyamah, when one passes away, they say, all that time I was burning in hell, but I was heedless. Barzakh, all that time I was in Barzakh, I was heedless to this fact. Sirat, all this time I was treading the Sirat, I was heedless to it. After death, they realized they were moment to moment on this sirat. Not that the sirat exists after physical death. Questioning of the angels. All this time they were questioning me. Only now I realized it. In my 70, 80, 100 years of life, they were asking me every day. I was blind. I was deaf. After physical death, now I realize it. All of religion, only now I realize it. Maliki Yawmiddin, he was Malik here too. Only now, in the hereafter, I realize it. And this is going to be difficult. And no son yawmun, man is asleep. Because he sees the chair, PhD, PhD, wife, wife. He's asleep. He's in his own world, imaginary world. When is he going to wake up from this sleep? Idha matu intabahu. When he enters the hereafter. When he dies, there he wakes up. And then he sees, he realizes that all that time he was asleep. It was all imaginary. And that's going to be very difficult. Okay. Now, with your permission, I want to speak about one or two characters of in the massacre of Karbala, inshallah. And we have to evaluate ourselves. When I speak about these characters, the story of Karbala is the story of the soul. Yes, this event happened. It happened in real terms. History has recorded it. But in addition to its reality on the physical realm, there's a reality that Karbala is portraying, which is the story of the soul. With the stories of the Holy Quran, when it speaks of the prophets such as Ibrahim, Musa, Isa, alayhimu salam, it's a story of the soul and how you can realize your Ibrahimi, Musawi, Isawi dimension within. It wants you to become Ibrahimi. It wants you to become Musawi. It wants you to become Isawi. The stories of the Quran is the story of the I, the self. It's a story of what the self can become. It's a story of the potential of the I. Also with the stories of the Ahlul Bayt, the same phenomenon exists. And in Karbala, the story of Qasim, the story of Ali Akbar, the story of Lady Zainab, alayhi wasalam, all these is because you have a Qasimi dimension. You have a Zainabi dimension. These are all spiritual states. These characters, be they male or female, it doesn't matter. There's spirituality in the realm of the spirit, which is sexless. They're models for men and women. However, we can become Shimri too. We can become Fir'oni too. That potential also exists. Some characters, one is in total perplexity how these characters are protecting the Imam. Amr ibn Qarada, he was a very loyal protector and supporter of Imam Hussein. Every arrow, he would put his hand in front of it. Every sword which was coming in the direction of Imam Hussein, he would put his limbs in front of it. These things are very easy to say, but maybe none of us, maybe none of us would have been in Karbala if we were there. It's very easy to shout and cry and lament and say, Hussein, Hussein. But most of it may be imaginary, nothing. When it comes to action, we don't know. What does it mean to put one's limbs in front of the swords? To put one's hands blocking the arrows? Arrow after arrow, sword after sword, injury after injury. And then at the end saying to the Imam that this event happened after Salat al-Zuhr, the Zuhr prayers. There were very few people left. All my deeds accepted. And then Imam replied, Naam, anta amami fil Jannah. He said, yes, and you are before me. You will precede me in heaven. And he passed away and became martyred. And before becoming martyred, the Imam said, tell my father, my grandfather, my grandmother, my mother, that I am going to join them soon. It's very difficult to understand these things. And sometimes I feel embarrassed even speaking about it because we don't know what it means to block arrows and swords. In order to be able to convey this, I was thinking in the 8-year war that the enemies of Islam imposed upon Iran, There were some scenes that the war veterans have related, which may help a bit to understand Karbala. Maybe, because the motto of the Iranian soldiers was all about Hussein and Karbala. They were living, they were breathing Hussein. The Hussein alayhi salam was their model. One of the veterans in his memoirs, many years later, said that there was this Iranian who would always say victory upon Khomeini. And the Ba'athi soldiers there, I mean, I don't even want to call them Iraqi soldiers, the Ba'athi soldiers, they would hit him a lot. They would whip him, hit him, kick him. He was fractured, his jaw broke. And then they broke his nose. With the blood of his nose, he wrote Khomeini on the walls because he couldn't speak because they broke his jaw. You see, that loyalty to Khomeini. Because it was Khomeini, without a doubt, which brought Muhammad and Islam. Muhammad and Islam was, but people were blind in American Islam without knowing it. We can't deny this. Imam Khomeini manifested Muhammad and Islam. It was almost buried. I'm not saying 100%. But we can't fool ourselves. Imam Khomeini has a right on everyone's shoulders today. Anyway, then this veteran who saw this, he said the next day the Ba'athi general there was hitting another soldier. But this time it was very violent. And this soldier, the Ba'athi general said, say death to Khomeini. The soldier wouldn't say it. But this time, the Ba'athi general was hitting this particular soldier very violently. So much so that his comrade general said to him, what's wrong? You've gone out of control now. The general said, look, he's Christian and he's not saying it. And this bothers me. He's Christian, but he still doesn't say death to Khomeini. See, this kind of loyalty we've seen. It's on record. It's not bad to listen to these stories sometimes in order to maybe get a glimpse of what happened in Karbala. So that was Amr ibn Gharda. He had a good fate. But there's another character that me and you, if we were to be in our most perfect of states, we wouldn't have been better than this one. He's the best that we could have been. He's called the Hawk. The Hawk ibn Abdullah. He went, this is in the history books, Tabari, in Tabari's history, this story is related. The Hawk accompanied with his friend Malik ibn Nadr, Arhabi. They went to see Imam Hussein to pay their respects. They weren't amongst those Kufans who had signed 18,000 signatures given to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. These two weren't part of them. They came though, paid their respects. And also informed Imam Hussein that the Kufans have given their allegiance and they're ready to fight for you. Imam Hussein said yes. And when they were about to leave, Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, why can't I expect your help and your loyalty? Malik, who was the Hawk's friend, said, I am in debt. I have a few debts to pay off. And also I'm preoccupied with my wife and children. The Hawk went one step higher. He said, I too have debts and I'm preoccupied with my wife and children. However, if you tell me to come, I'll come, but with one condition. Saying this to the Imam, with this condition that if things become dire and no one is left and my presence is of no worth to you anymore, you have to let me go. This was said. Imam said, okay, no problem. The Hawk accepted and went to Karbala. But both of them said, look, we have debts to pay off. Me and you, living in this capitalist system, by nature we have debts to pay off. Imam, in one tradition, said, if you have debts, don't join me. And this is the physical meaning of having debts. What the esoteric meaning is, we have no hope. He didn't want people who are indebted to join. That was of no benefit to him. The Hawk came to Karbala and he contributed a lot and he was injured a lot. The story is very extensive, I don't want to go through the whole story. But what happened was towards the end, when there were very few people left and the Hawk saw this is the end, he said to Imam, do you recall our deal? I mean, at that part of Karbala, towards the very end, to say that to the Imam, to remind the Imam, do you remember our deal? That you allowed me to leave. Well, what the Hawk did was good. Me and you may have not reached this stage. But then he reminded Imam, Do you recall the deal that we made? The mom said, yes. But how are you going to go? The hawk said, no, I've organized that. Because what the enemy's side did, they would cut the foot tendons of the horses of Imam Hussein's soldiers, so the horses can't move anymore. The hawk knew this custom. He put his horse aside in a particular place. He said, don't worry, I can make my way out. And he did make his way out. With the help of three people on the enemy's side that knew him, were old friends of his. But he managed and he escaped. It's sad that he had to have such a fate, but also one has to admire, at least he came this far. We have to come out of this imaginary fold and really evaluate deep down what kind of individual we would have been. Have a conscience. Be honest to yourself and try to elevate your souls. وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله.